is time to put away the bias, the lies, and deceit and bring forth real talk from real people about real news. Providing the out loud truth and capturing the essence of a new generation all in a fast-paced hour. This is Viewpoint This Sunday.
Welcome to another Viewpoint This Sunday. This is Malcolm Out Loud. Well, we meet again, my friends. It has been 6 weeks I have been off the air, if you can believe it. This is the longest time in 5 years that it wasn't Malcolm Out Loud, actually. It was Malcolm Be Quiet, right? I was in the back doing a lot of things here on this platform. It has been an incredible busy 6 weeks that I have been off, and this is the first time I'm back on with you. We will resume my daily program this coming Wednesday. We expand it to 2 hours a day, by the way, so I want to remind you of that. You catch me every day 5 to 7 Eastern time and anywhere in the world, of course, on America Out Loud Talk Radio. So what have we been up to? Well, as you know, we have totally rebuilt our platform, new servers, expanded for the growth, five-year celebration, a five-year anniversary moment for us. And we wanted to make the next 5 years that much more extraordinary. And to do that, we needed to expand everything. So you'll see the new platform, the new site, right at AmericaOutLoud.com. And my fellow Americans, I could not be more pleased that we are going to be a conservative beacon for this nation as we jump things up a bit and get to that next level. We have a lot of expanded program and new shows on the network. Quite a few we'll talk about a little bit later on. It is very exciting to see this growth. But the new platform and website there has been, again, built with you in mind from the ground up. So please feel comfortable, be at home, get over there, check it out. And by the way, there's notifications on there. You get notified when breaking news stories are on. You've got an email sign up, all kinds of cool stuff. So check it out. It is really different for a news site, by the way. It's extraordinary, actually. Put a lot of thought into this as we looked at a lot of news sites out there, but want to, how do you say, one up everything and make it very, very special for all. So check that out, please. So as we join you here on Viewpoint, can you imagine 6 weeks of quiet? And, you know, I was sitting on my hands yelling here with all this news going on in the past 6 weeks. It's like, wow. So today we're going to start here with the Supreme Court pack. And we got a lot more news to get into throughout the program here. We'll start with Dinesh D'Souza. It's good to be back in the saddle here. And Dinesh, no better person to do it with than you, sir. So Dinesh, as you know, is an author, filmmaker, what I call a storyteller of truth is the way I always look at it here. He's an American patriot, first and foremost, and he is host of the exciting and what is called the Dinesh D'Souza podcast. Now, that is available on audio and video. And I have to tell you, there ain't many out there who put it out there like Dinesh. Welcome to the program, brother.
Hey, thank you. I appreciate it. Looking forward to it.
All right. So let's talk about the Supreme Court. So here's the thing I'm thinking now. All right. So we had the Merrick Garland thing. We know what happened there. We then had the Trump phenomenon, I would say, because he had three conservative picks with Gorsuch, Kavanaugh, and Barrett, Amy Coney Barrett, of course. That kind of put the court, for the first time in a very long time, a little more tilted to the right, although they haven't done anything crazy. I mean, everything seems to have been pretty quiet, actually. Now things are starting to get unsettled. There was a lot of talk about this during the election, packing the court. We heard a lot about that. Not much was done about it. Now we see a new measure being put forth, Dinesh. It's called the Judiciary Act of 2021, being co-sponsored by Jerry Nadler, the congressman, the chair of the House Judiciary Committee, Hank Johnson, Georgia, Mondaire Jones in New York, and Senator Ed Markey of Massachusetts. And they seem to be sidestepping this Biden 6-month commission he put in place and going straight to the court pack and then kind of leaving all the checks and balances out of the way. What do you make of this at this point? Are you surprised? And where does this thing go?
Well, before the election, many conservatives, me included, warned that they would try to do this. The Biden people said, no, this is not something that they were committed to doing. And now they are turning around and sort of trying to do the thing they said that they were not committed to doing. Now, Biden, I think, recognizes how toxic and kind of radioactive this issue is. And so I think he has gotten Pelosi's agreement to sort of move it through slowly. The idea being to stage a kind of commission, stack it with left-wing academics. They produce a report. And then at the end of the report, Biden will go, well, they made some excellent ideas and maybe we'll try to do X, Y, or Z. Now, I think the position of Nadler and Markey is, listen, why go through all this tap dancing routine and backwards somersaulting and all this ballet? We kind of know what the commission is going to come up with anyway. We're stacking the commission to have a preordained result. Why don't we just get to the result now? Why don't we just realize that it's the way to solve 6-3 is if you add four more justices, that gets us to 7-6, problem solved. So in a sense, there's a kind of a crude honesty in what Nadler and Markey are doing. Biden is the one who's trying to do all this behind a veil.
Yeah, a crude honesty. That's a hell of a way to put it, a crude honesty. I guess if you're going to put it out there in the light of day, yeah, there's not much hidden with this thing at all. Now, let me share with you a couple of very telling comments from a couple of these leaders, and they do tell a little bit of a story here. The one thing you have to say, Dinesh, about Democrat leaders is, and the one thing they actually get an A plus in their report card is they are the ultimate wordsmiths, the left. They are just magnificent. If the right could play as dangerous as they could with words, we'd have half a shot here. So let me read you what Representative Nadler says. He says, we are not packing the Supreme Court. We are unpacking it, he says. He goes on to say, he says the bill would restore balance. Now listen to this. This just kills me here. He says the bill would restore balance. Yeah, whose balance? Your balance? So it would restore balance to the nation's highest court after 4 years of norm-breaking actions by Republicans, which led to its current composition. Now, I really get a charge out of that. Current composition. And as you say, let's do the math real quick again. If you add 4 to the 9, well, geez, that brings 13. That puts them 1 up, and that would be a better composition. Dinesh, you can't make this stuff up. They're not hiding any of this. But where's the pushback on this?
Well, I think that their argument is that somehow the decision not to bring the Merrick Garland case forward somehow constitutes some kind of misconduct. Now, the reality is that any Supreme Court nominee requires the advice and consent of the Senate. So if the Senate refuses consent, that's not an abrogation of constitutional procedure. That is the constitutional procedure. So there's nothing untoward in the way we've gotten the court we have. There's been no violation of the rules, not at all. And all that the left is complaining about is that the vast majority of nominees are Republican, but that is the way it is. Now, the court is supposed to be a check itself on the legislature and on the executive. I mean, the court is envisioned as part of a constitutional architecture of checks and balances. Who's going to protect minority rights if not the Supreme Court? It's not going to be the majority. It's not going to be the executive leader. It has to be the court standing up for citizens in their First Amendment rights or their Second Amendment rights or their Fourth Amendment right to do against unreasonable search and seizure or their Fifth Amendment right to due process of law. So this idea that somehow the court should be an expression of democracy, no, the court is very consciously constructed as something that applies a certain block and tackle to democracy to protect minority rights and individual rights.
Yeah, well, that's perfectly said, because what we call that in layman's terms is checks and balances, right, Dinesh? I mean, that's really exactly what we're talking about here, totally. You know, listen, to bring this a little further now, Ed Markey, the senator of Massachusetts, he says, we are here today because the United States Supreme Court is broken. You just got to love this stuff here. He says it's out of balance. And it's a chuckle, Dinesh. Well, yeah, it's out of balance. It's out of your balance, a left-wing Marxist balance. Sure, it's out of that balance. We get it. And it needs to be fixed, he says. Too many Americans view our highest court in the land as a partisan political institution, not our impartial judicial branch of government. Now, I want to tell you, I hear him say here, partisan political institution, and I hear what you were just saying here. I have always believed the Supreme Court is just another political tool for the officials in Washington to manipulate. When you look at a lot of these decisions, which I have surely paid attention to over the years, that come 5-4, what always amazed me is you have the same set of eyes and the intellect looking at the Constitution, and yet they can all interpret it in various different ways. Well, sure. And they interpret it to their political ideology and their political expediency. So it has always been that way in my world. And yet Markey comes out and says, well, but the court is, it's acting that way. The court has always acted that way, Dinesh. Tell me I'm wrong.
Well, you're certainly right that ever since the Warren Court, going back to the 1950s, when Earl Warren took over as Chief Justice, the Warren Court was very left-wing, very activist. And see, I think the key thing is that they don't even believe that the Constitution should stand in the way. So for the left, interpretation of the Constitution is almost a technique for invalidation of the Constitution. If the Constitution says X and they want to do Y, all they have to do is write something kind of clever saying that the Constitution didn't really mean X. Or that there's a larger hidden principle in the Constitution that mandates why. So the bottom line of it is this kind of hijacking of the plain meaning of the Constitution is only coming from one side of the political aisle. You might have conservatives who are more disposed to free markets or this or that, but they very rarely violate the plain language of the Constitution, or they very rarely invent rights out of whole cloth. But we've been seeing that happen from the left in case after case after case.
Yeah. Well, let me say this. I'm hearing a lot of talk, you probably are as well, about term limits or age limit of justices or one or the other versus a lifetime appointment, more or less. And I'm hearing, if I've heard this properly, Dinesh, and you correct me on this otherwise, but I think there are multiple Republican leaders. The Democrat leaders want this, is what I'm understanding. The Republicans are pushing back against it a bit. Or at least that's some of the gossip. Let me call it that, gossip I've heard. You know, but I understand that's one of the things they're trying to push. But I have to tell you, Dinesh, if that's the case, this is one I would actually agree with the Democrats on, if what I just said is accurate, and you tell me, because I absolutely believe the Supreme Court should not be a lifetime appointment. I absolutely have always believed that. I believe everything should be term limited in Washington, D.C., everything across the board. Nobody should stay there for any long period of time and become part of the woodwork. So what do you take on that?
Well, I think that, these things, for example, how many Supreme Court justices should there be? Should there be 9 or 11 or 13? Mm-hmm. Look, that's not set in stone. The Constitution doesn't say. Right. Second of all, you know, do we want a bunch of 85-year-olds and 90-year-olds who basically can barely stay awake? I mean, remember Ruth Bader Ginsburg almost would fall into her soup, every now and then. So I don't disagree that there would be some prudence in establishing a retirement age. But here's the point. For the Democrats at this stage, it is merely a ruse right. to get a hold of a majority on the court. So they want to have retirement limits now so that they can force 2 or 3 guys off the court and name replacements themselves. This is not a neutral process in which they go, look, ideally, we should have 13 justices. Ideally, we should have people retired 75. So let's establish a gradualist procedure so this can occur in a fair manner so that neither side derives an advantage from this procedural change. For them, it's all about getting the result, and all their recommendations are oriented toward that sole objective.
Yeah, I don't disagree with what you say at all. And yet it really disgusts me. It truly, really does disgust me, Dinesh, in the way that none of these clowns put our country first. It actually saddens me as well. I'm not sure which comes first, the sad or the disgust. But it really is despicable how they don't ever put our country first. And I'm talking both political parties. They put whatever their agenda is that they're promoting at the moment first. You know, let's remind people that in 1937, FDR was, this was one of famous talking point. He tried to get his New Deal through. And actually, there were a lot of similarities to that moment in time to now. There was a power push going on in Washington. Good God, hasn't there always been a power push, people? You know what I mean? Come on. But there was a power push back then as well with his New Deal and the programs. And he couldn't get it through the court. And he wanted to pack the court. And he was doing a lot of creative bargaining and how to get it done back in 37. And yet here we are again. Remind me of something, and I'm not positive of this, Dinesh, maybe you might know. Didn't they lose, the Democrats, a barrel load of seats? I mean, it was a barrel load. I don't remember that exact number. It was killer though, in the House in the next election. Was that correct?
Well, two things happened. One is FDR suffered some setbacks politically. I think equally significant, there were prominent Democrats at that time who, even though they supported the New Deal, opposed FDR on the court backing. They realized that this would actually be very bad for the court and for the country. So the key difference between then and now, I think, is that the Democratic Party has really changed. And with perhaps one or two exceptions, maybe Senator Manchin, maybe Senator Sinema, but with one or two exceptions, the Democrats are on board with court packing. They're on board with the voter reform, so-called, called HR1. They're on board with overriding the filibuster. So the Democratic Party is not quite the same as it was a generation ago.
This is not going to be an easy thing to pull off. In the end, I don't think they get this done. Do you?
I agree. I don't think that they will succeed at this. They're going to try, but I think that they are better off strategically trying to get HR1. The net effect of HR1, which is the voter reform package being pushed by Pelosi, is it will give the Democrats a long-term, you can almost call it, home court advantage. Doesn't mean they'll win every single election, but it means it makes it harder for the opposition to beat them. So they would be setting up a playing field in which there is an edge for their side. And over time, they would have the chance to transform the court. But I think if they go for it now, most likely they're going to be defeated.
Yeah, and the public uprising, I hope and pray, will be there. I pray that Americans of all kinds of stripes will stand up and realize what this is and call it out for what it is, and then give them the same treatment they did back to FDR in 37. No thank you, shut the door, and then lose your pants in the next election. Would be a beautiful thing and would be sunshine again in America for sure, or at least headed that direction. One last thing I want to ask you, and I was thinking about this before we move on from this. You know, Dinesh, there were plenty of warnings that the Democrats were going to exploit this moment with a full-on power grab. I mean, this is what this is a full-on power grab. We talked about this through the election, plenty of signals to this end. And I wondered, and I've been wondering here in the last many days, what do you think it is? Was it that the people, if they did win the election, arguably won the election, I'm going to leave the word arguably there because we're not going to get into that today. Was it that the people didn't believe it, them, that they would do this? Do you think they didn't care? And I'm talking a lot of Americans, that they didn't care, like it, whatever, it wasn't a big deal. They just want to get Trump out of there. Or was it the media soft selling and censoring these stories that put us in the position we're in?
Yeah, I think it was two factors. One is that Trump was always a radioactive figure. I was always surprised both at the level of intense devotion to Trump, but I was also equally struck by the level of intense opposition to Trump. It's almost as if, you know, in any crowd, you'd find intense Trump devotees and intense Trump haters. I also thought that the first debate with Biden was very bad for Trump. Trump seemed irritable, irascible, unpresidential in some respects. And I think that it may be that a lot of well-meaning people who don't pay attention to politics on a daily basis, they looked at it and they just went, well, you know, I think it's time for this guy to get out of there. And they weren't thinking about Biden. Nobody, I don't think really anyone voted for Biden. People voted for Trump or against Trump. Probably even Jill Biden voted against Trump rather than for Biden. So this was not a mandate for the Biden agenda. And so, like you say, it's, you know, you just think that people, if they have any sense, are going to look around and go, wow, what happened to my free speech? I mean, what happened to my religious freedom? What happened to my chance to basically live my own life and, you know, unmolested by the government? Suddenly, I've got the heavy hand of the government working in tandem with digital media to censor me, block me, control my life. So I don't think this is really what Americans want or have signed up for. So the Democrats are, you know, they're taking a risk here and pushing things to such a limit.
Yeah. Before I turn the page and get to immigration in just a moment, I want to stop in Minnesota with you for just a moment, please. And you see this latest shooting again. It's very odd because as they're doing the case and the verdict, we'll know very shortly about this Derek Chauvin and the George Floyd case. We've got this other shooting that's happened with Dante Wright and the taser gun debate there, which we'll be talking about a little bit later with the program with the National Police Association. You know, I want to ask you, now we're seeing the same thing. The former officer here, Kim Potter, is charged with second-degree manslaughter and the death of this man. You have demonstrators clashing. They're throwing things at the police, burning stuff again, torching buildings. I mean, looting everything, looting the local Dollar Generals. I mean, just tearing the place apart. It's like these people sit at home and they wait for the next big thing to happen. And then they run like hell to get out to get their shopping fest done of some sort to burn the city down. What do you make of this latest case and the rash of shootings we're having in recent days? I mean, is this another thing we can blame on COVID fever or what's going on in the country?
Yeah, something is clearly up. Now, with regard to these two police cases, I think what is striking to me is that the whole movement to defund the police is based on the idea that it is not an individual policeman or policewoman who is to blame. It is somehow the system itself, right? That's the premise of defund the police. Because if you thought an individual was to blame, it would be more like, let's get rid of the bad apples and make sure they're replaced by good apples. Now, interestingly, in the Derek Chauvin case, if you listen to the prosecution, it's very clear that the case that they're making, by the way, cheered on by the left, is that Derek Chauvin is a bad apple. In fact, you have the police chief coming on and then other colleagues coming on. And what are they saying? They're all saying, oh, no, you know, this is not what the manual tells you to do. This is not how police officers are trained. This guy's departing from what we've already realized we should do. So the bottom line is they keep saying Derek Chauvin is a bad apple. And in doing that, they're also saying our system is fine. It's good. There's nothing wrong with the police system in general. Now, interestingly, when you pivot over to the Kim Potter case, the case involving Dante Wright, now I think you might actually have a bit of a systemic problem. And by systemic problem, I don't mean a race problem because there's no indication in either case that the actions taken by either cop, Chauvin or Potter, had anything to do with race. Mm-hmm. But if Kim Potter, a 26-year veteran, can't, you know, somehow tell the difference between a taser and her gun, it seems to me, I wonder, there is something wrong with the way that these cops are trained, because that seems like a pretty reckless mistake for an experienced patrol woman to make. So interestingly, I think the Dante Wright incident points to the possibility that there may be something wrong with the police training process, while ironically, in the case that was supposed to be all about, you know, the cops are, the system is structurally racist and so on. I mean, race was hardly brought up in the Derek Chauvin prosecution. It was all about what this guy did under this situation, and whether the victim was white or black didn't seem to count a whole lot.
Okay, fair enough. So the immigration on the southern border, you talk about a 180 in a policy. Boy, this would be the one right here, from the Donald Trump policies to the Biden administration policies. It's funny because Trump ran on this and won on this issue, and yet Biden has nixed and torn everything apart, turned the page up entirely, and is doing the polar opposites of what Trump has done. Listen to these numbers. Nearly 172,000 migrants crossed the U.S.-Mexico border in March. This was the most in a couple of decades almost here. This included almost 20,000. Can you imagine these numbers, people? Almost 20,000 unaccompanied minors. I mean, unaccompanied minors. That's a nice way of saying we let our kids go play in the desert or threw them over the wall. I mean, how sick is this? I mean, this is the most ever recorded in a month period. And then, you know, the Washington Post headline, just remind you, Dinesh, back on March 25th, and they said, this is another thing with this crazy media we have in this nation. There's no migrant surge at the U.S. southern border, was their headline on the 25th of March. The migrant surge at the U.S. southern border is actually a predictable pattern, they said. Evidence reveals it's just a usual seasonal bump. I mean, good God, what are these people on, you know? And so, what do you make of this whole thing? There's the argument, of course, about Kamala Harris going down. She's not doing her job, this or that. But they don't really give a rat's ass about what's going on at the border. They just want everybody to come in here and create chaos. And it's like these people that, now, if this was all happening on Trump's watch, Pelosi would be up there screaming. Schumer would be having a heart attack. The house, a dome would blow off. Everybody would be blowing steam. I mean, what do you make of this thing?
Well, if the Democrats had the slightest inclination that any of these migrants over time would begin to vote Republican, they would build a bigger wall than Trump could even dream of. In fact, they would do to the U.S. border what they have done to Washington, D.C., erect a wall, erect fences, put up barbed wire, have the military there. So this is a very cynical operation by the Democrats. In fact, the two cynical groups that are working here in tandem, kind of like the two sides of a scissors, are the Democrats on the one hand on this side of the border, and then the kidnappers, the cartels, the gangs, the coyotes on the other side of the border. So this is an operation that really kind of needs both groups to succeed. The Biden administration has to open the door, open the gate, you may say, and then the criminals basically get to work on the other side. And they're literally going to homes in El Salvador and Nicaragua and saying, listen, you know, we want to take your kid. Or in some cases, they kidnap your kid. I mean, imagine how dangerous it would be right now to be a 7-year-old on the streets of Tijuana. Wow. You have an excellent chance of being grabbed or kidnapped. Why? Because then you're basically handed off to some guy who's paying money, who's paid $7,000 or $9,000 to get across the border. And he needs a kid as his, quote, passport to do that. So the Biden people know all about this. They're deeply cynical about it. They pretend, you know, shed crocodile tears in front of the media. But the reality of it is this is a situation that they created for their political benefit. So it's to the financial benefit of the kidnappers and the gangs and the cartels on that side. And it's to the political benefit of the left and the Democrats on this side. And the victims are the migrants themselves. And of course, the victims are also other people like other immigrants in other countries who are standing in a very long line to come in the legal way. And then you've got these people just jumping the line.
Yeah, this is beyond now a fight about immigration and a fight about illegal immigration or a fight about humanity. This is everything you just say, plus, plus, plus. You know, Representative Steve Scalise was just down at the border the other day, and he reported over 50 countries were represented there in that one area he was there, including, of course, from the Middle East. They're coming in from Yemen. They're coming in from all over the place. I mean, it's an invitation. We're being publicized all over the world. We got to be the laughing stock of everything. He also said 40% of the Border Patrol agents are babysitting because they have to because of the, I told you, 20,000 kids. I mean, God forbid, that's a load there. So the system can't handle it. And then you have to wonder, Dinesh, what is really, there is only one end game. The end game has to be some sort of recognition of voters. This isn't a good thing for humanity. The kids are being raped. They're being tortured. People are being, and this is all a money-driven exercise. I guess the real final question on this is, are Americans really paying attention? Because these policies put into place and turning back everything from the Biden administration, it's beyond reckless. It's criminal, Dinesh. It's criminal.
Yeah, these people are quite honestly destroying the country before our very eyes. And look, you know, I mean, some of us warned about this. We said that the American dream hung in the balance. And so at that time, I bet you there were Americans who were like, oh man, these guys are just, you know, doing what they always do. It's always the most important election of our lifetime. It's always a, you know, things are going to go downhill if we cast our vote this way. But I think this prediction turned out to be right. It's, you know, it's sort of like bend over America, because a lot of bad stuff is going to be coming down the pike. And I don't think we're done with the worst yet. So whether we will ever be able to dig our way out of this is a whole other question. Mm-hmm. But I think in the short term, we're seeing a group of people who are reckless with the public purse. They're reckless with the border. They're reckless with public safety inside the country. They're absolute radicals when it comes to the family and morals. They're willing to use COVID to impose all kinds of curtailments of our basic civil liberties. They're working in tandem on digital censorship. So this is a thoroughly wicked crew. And I think it's going to be up to a very tough Republican Party to have to mobilize against this. Otherwise, one by one, we see our freedoms go down.
Yeah, it is a precarious moment. And you explain it perfectly there. It's just not another. We're not talking just another moment in time here. I mean, we're talking really our freedoms and liberties. It's not a talking point. Things are, and you can feel it out there. You can feel it with people. You sort of know something's happening out there. And we're fighting. You know, we have got to get better as conservatives and as patriots that love our nation. We must get better at messaging. We must get better at packaging. We must get better at the argument and the debate of using the English language. We must get better at communicating to the American people. Now, speaking of which, Dinesh, your podcast is audio, video. Again, you're a conservative voice like myself and so many others we have on our platform. And we're out here on the front lines doing what we believe is God's work and certainly doing our nation's work. I wanted to ask you your podcast that you play there. You put it on Rumble. How is Rumble working out for you? I want people to know Rumble is kind of a new alternative to YouTube. And we need to get YouTube out of the picture at well at some point, even though they're the, you know, the Goliath there in the room. What do you think about Rumble? Is it good? You like it?
Yeah, I do. I think we need to, we almost have a moral duty to encourage these alternative platforms. Amen. Because it's just intolerable to have platforms that engage in routine and systematic censorship. By the way, censorship not of any kind of hate, but ideological censorship systematically applied. We see it with Facebook, we see it with YouTube, we see it with Twitter. Mike Lindell is starting his own platform. Yes. Called Frank.
Dinesh D'Souza, you are a class act and always a pleasure to talk with you. And back to what Dinesh is speaking about here, friends. Our programming on the weekends is incredible on America Out Loud Talk Radio. So buckle your seatbelt, take your shoes off, stay a while. We've got some, you talk about intellect, engineers, scientists, doctors, just terrific people. The lineup on the weekends is absolutely incredible and during the week on America Out Loud Talk Radio. Well, listen, we'll take a quick pause here. We've got a lot more coming up here. Paul Engel, a constitutional expert, will join us, and Sergeant Betsy Brantner Smith from the National Police Association will be here as well. Stay right there, friends. More Viewpoint in just a moment.
The America Out Loud Talk Radio app is on Android or Apple. It's the perfect way to listen in to the new generation of talk shows and hosts who are ready to inform and inspire.
Five incredible years, and we're just getting started. Well, they say time flies when you're having fun. Well, it also flies by when you're on a mission of love. Love of country, that is. Well, our goal is to unite people from all backgrounds and beliefs in an effort to advance humanity. You can listen in on our free apps on Apple, Android, or Alexa. AmericaOutloud.com. It's a fight for the soul of humanity.
Global experts are brilliant writers and engaging hosts on a mission of a lifetime. You'll find the latest news and inspiration on the front page of AmericaOutloud.com.
Welcome back to Viewpoint. Well, it is a joy to be with you. I cannot believe I've been off the air for 6 weeks, but I have. And I've been busy doing a lot of woodwork in the backdrop here on America Out Loud. As you know, we celebrated 5 years, five amazing years on our anniversary here. And we really wanted to set the pace for the next 5 years. So again, this platform has been totally rebuilt, our website from the ground up, with expanded service and expanded reach for our growth. And you'll see it's one of the best news sites, if not the best news site in our nation. And I say that in a very braggadocious way because it's true. Just go over to AmericaOutLoud.com and check it out. It is a fabulous site with all kinds of great new writers, great new programming, and all weekend long here as well. Now, I'll be back with you daily next Wednesday. You'll catch me 2 hours every day, 5 to 7, and looking forward to tuning up there with you. We'll have a whole cast of new players on the program, new producer, all kinds of cool stuff. So listen, I've been busy. I tell you, got a lot of stuff going on here. Let me get on with it here and bring on Sergeant Betsy Bratner Smith. She's spokesman for the National Police Association. And Sergeant Betsy, you've been following these stories. Now, I want to start first with Dante Wright, the 20-year-old man that was stopped during a routine traffic stop there in a Brooklyn Center in Minnesota. Now, this is Kim Potter is the officer now that this was sadder beyond sad. I mean, let me ask you, this is a veteran. How does one mistake a taser for a gun? That's a good place to start.
Well, sure. And that's the thing. Officer Kim Potter was a veteran officer, a field training officer, by all accounts, just a really solid, solid person in her community and a good cop. And yet, you know, she probably, what happened is she fell victim to what we call a slip and capture error, which is basically, it's basically a disruption of intent by the human brain. And this happens to people all the time. It just doesn't usually happen with deadly circumstances. If Malcolm, if you have a certain vehicle you drive in your personal life, and then you go on vacation and you rent a car, and the rental car has a different ignition or a different gear shift, but you always reach for that familiar gear shift or starting mechanism that the car that you use all the time has. That's really all it is. And this is something that's been studied for decades and decades. A man by the name of James Reason wrote a book called Human Error, where he studied slip and capture and these disruption of intent errors in the human brain when it comes to aviation. Mm-hmm. But this happens with law enforcement with the introduction of the taser, which is a kind of a firearm shaped tool. And this situation that happened with Officer Potter and Deontay Wright, it's happened about 16 times in the last 10 years.
So it has happened. Now, when it has happened before, I've read somewhere along the line, and correct me on this if this is accurate or not, that it's hard. It's typically more challenging to convict a police officer for something that is routinely taken on as an accident, a mistake. In other words, this isn't an intentional, we don't believe it is, a shooting where she took up and said, well, I'm going to shoot you because I don't like you, or as some of the leftists say, in the racist card because you're black, or whatever that conversation's all about. There's no sign here that racism played any part of this, but that doesn't stop them from talking about it. How much trouble is she in is what I'm asking you.
Well, you know, and most famously before this case, we had the Oscar Grant shooting in California. Mm-hmm. and that officer mistook his taser for his handgun for a taser in a physical altercation with Oscar Grant, shot and killed him. And that officer went to prison. So, you know, we look at Officer Kim Potter. She clearly had no intent to shoot Deontay Wright. She said, I'm going to tase you, stop, or I'm going to tase you. She said, taser, taser, taser. But she did fire her weapon. Mm-hmm. And so, yes, she's been charged with, it's either second or third degree manslaughter, which means that she didn't intend mm-hmm. to kill him, but her actions caused death or great bodily harm. Absolute legal trouble, you know, and she's out of her career. She had to flee her home as with her husband, who's also a police officer. Her life is never going to be the same.
No, you never are when you get into the news cycle like this. So you will not be surprised if she serves some get sentenced for this, some prison time.
I won't be surprised, no, if she does, you know, and which is unfortunate because,
right,
you know, it's a horrible, tragic mistake, but it's a mistake that cost someone else his life.
Right. But it's also tragic for this family, obviously. Let me ask you something real quickly, a couple of things here. Dante Wright, did he have I don't know, what's his background? Is he a pretty secure, safe fellow in the neighborhood? Is he does he have a criminal record? What do we know about him?
So he was awaiting trial for robbery.
Oh.
He victimized a couple of women. He had the warrant that the officers were trying to arrest him for was a weapons charge warrant. Mm. He was known to the Brooklyn Center Police. He was known to carry a 45 caliber handgun. His social media is filled with posts where he's already run from the police before. They know he's a runner. He's been charged with that. And his social media posts are all about running from the police, smoking weed, and, you know, trying to, deal drugs, make money, things like that. No, this was not a solid citizen in his neighborhood.
Yeah, I guess I've seen a couple of things, but I really wasn't positive. I haven't studied deep down to this, and I knew I had you coming on. You'd fill us all in. But there is a background with this guy, obviously, then, yeah. It always seems to work that way, doesn't it, Betsy? I mean, right, these kinds of cases, it always falls that way. Very sad case anyways, and there's going to be a price to pay for this. But more than that now, Minnesota is burning again, and the violence and the looting. And it's like these people sit at home on their sofa and they're waiting for the next big, it's like, you know, oh, let's all run out to the Dollar General or the Kmart and we'll trash the place and burn shit down. What's going on with all that stuff again? I mean, kind of expect that.
Remember, you know, Black Lives Matter activists and you know, liberal activists were already, remember, they were already in place right there because of the Derek Chauvin trial. So, right. You know, this whole, you know, narrative that this was somehow an organic protest is a bunch of nonsense. Of course, there were some organic protesters that were peaceful. But, you know, within 24 hours, of course, the Antifa people in their black bloc outfits showed up. So, yeah, they want the whole Minneapolis metro area to burn. Of course, there were sympathy protests in various areas of California, in Portland, and we're going to see more and more and more. And this is these protests. Now, let me say that differently. These riots and fires and looting have nothing to do anymore with Deontay Wright.
That
is just an excuse for the constant mayhem that the left and that Antifa wants to impart on this country to further divide the American people.
Yeah, and until we lay the gauntlet down on these groups, Sergeant Betsy, and we demand more, we're going to continue to have these problems and challenges from city to city to city in these, these urban cities, these always run by blue politicians. I don't find any joy in my step to say that, but it's despicable what's going on in our urban markets here for sure. I must get your opinion because we should know, I guess, this coming week on the Derek Chauvin case there. Everybody knows what's happened. This is like world famous now, George Floyd. I mean, the family became super wealthy. I mean, they're like multimillionaires 100 times over. I mean, they're living the life of luxury, I'm sure. I say that it probably isn't nice that I say it that way, Betsy, but I kind of feel that way. This was used as a political tool, this whole George Floyd case. What happens? Let me say this to you. I'm in a little dispute with my son, Betsy. Let me just tell you right now, my 17-year-old, he thinks that the officer's going to get off, that Derek Chauvin, and he has bets in school that he's going to get off that because the evidence isn't there to convict him. I don't believe that's going to happen. I believe they're going to be compelled to use him as a, as they always do, as a tool to show and hit back because of public persona and public relations. What say you?
Well, I agree with your son in that the prosecution put on a very weak case.
Mm-hmm.
And I think if we were under normal circumstances here, that this would be much like the Freddie Gray case in Baltimore, where the prosecution did not prove that Derek Chauvin had really anything to do with George Floyd's death. However, I believe that the jury is under such enormous pressure to convict Derek Chauvin of something that I just can't believe that there's a single juror who would say, hey, you know what? The prosecution did not do their job in this case. I mean, let's go back and look at Brooklyn Center and look at their city council who voted unanimously to fire the black city manager simply for saying at the press conference, Officer Kim Potter deserves due process. One of those city council members came forward the other day and said, you know what? I didn't think we should have fired the city manager, but I didn't want to be that one person who didn't say that we should fire him. I believe that's exactly going to be the mindset of the Derek Chauvin jury, that there's not going to be a single juror who is willing to stand up and say that the prosecution didn't do their job. Now these jurors are afraid. Antifa and Black Lives Matter, they will dox these jurors. Exactly. They will, you know, tell people where they live. I'm sure these jurors are afraid. That's why they should have moved that trial at a minute.
That's right. They should have. I agree with you on everything you said. But so let me correct the record here, just to be clear. So I have this bet with my son. So you said, well, you agree with him and get you, but you think the jury is going to be compelled to do the opposite.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Well, so then I win the bet because that's what I say. I just want to be clear with you, okay? So when he hears this, he'll know that is real. I think they're going to do what they think they have to do for public pressure, Sergeant Betsy. I think that's what they're going to do, really. All right. Can you do this? Are you okay for time? Can you hang in with me just a little bit here? Are you okay, Sergeant Betsy?
Absolutely.
All right.
Absolutely.
Stay right there. I want to bring on another great gentleman, and I want to have you back. And what I want to talk to you about a little bit after, just a few minutes here, Betsy, I want to talk to you about this latest shooting at the FedEx and what's going on in our country with these recent shootings. And let me bring on here now, Paul Engel will join us. And excited to have Paul on. Let me tell you about Paul. He is an author, a speaker. He spent more than 20 years studying and teaching, I love this, both the Bible and the U.S. Constitution. And by the way, those are the most two important documents in our country, really, the Constitution and the Bible. The Bible would be first, Constitution would be next. That's a fact, yeah? You can hear him daily on his new talk radio show. He was part of the five-year celebration I told you up front in the beginning of the program when we were talking to Dinesh. It's called the Constitution Study. And you'll hear him 4 p.m. Eastern Time, but hear him anywhere in the world, of course, on America Out Loud Talk Radio. It's the first time I've talked to Paul on air, so it's good to have him here. And so we're talking about, as I was talking up front of the program, Paul, with Dinesh D'Souza regarding this Supreme Court packing. And you who study the Constitution and understand what we're talking about here, I thought it would be an interesting voice to put in the mix here. They're trying to get the court from 9 to 13. It appears to be a complete power play at the moment. In your estimation, how likely is it that the Democrats could pull this off? Can they succeed at this, or is this going to be a long shot for them?
Thanks for having me on, Malcolm. I'm sad to say that I believe the raw exercise of power will win out. There's nothing in the Constitution that sets the size of the Supreme Court other than we have to have a court and there has to be a Chief Justice in case we impeach a president. Beyond that, it truly is up to Congress how big the Supreme Court is. And the Supreme Court actually has been as small as 5 members and as high as 10. If we look at the facts today, you have a Democratic majority, slim though it may be, in the House of Representatives. You have a tie in the Senate with the vice president being the tiebreaker. And you have a Democratic administration, which means you have a Democratic vice, both president and vice president. All of them have said they want to pack the court. So there is no.
But you process. Think they can, you, I mean, right now, unless they do the filibuster, they would need 60 votes. You think, in other words, you think by hook or by crook, you think you believe they're going to leave the table and be successful and have them pull this off to expand it? Or do you think they fall short?
I think they're going to pull it off because it really comes down to whether or not Chuck Schumer is willing to basically nuke the filibuster in order to get this through, in order to get the packing through. And if you look at the Democratic wins over the last several years, how many of them come not from the legislative process, not from the representative process, but from the judicial process, from the idea of if we can't get it through legislation, if we can't pass a constitutional amendment, we'll just get the courts to reinterpret it. And it has destroyed so many of our rights. I would be surprised if they... pleasantly, though, I would be surprised if push comes to shove, if Chuck Schumer doesn't find a way to
pull it off somehow, huh?
Yeah, get rid of the filibuster, right. push this through, right. Because that is their power play. That's where their power is.
Well, there's been a lot of talk. They have a whole agenda of items they would like to push through if they can, as you say, nuclear the filibuster. And then it's going to be like, free Kool-Aid for everybody at that point. You know, they're all going to be sipping from the mental Kool-Aid. Let me say to you, so let's talk to America now about the danger in this. Now, FDR tried this back in the 30s. So he was, trying to push his New Deal through. The Supreme Court was, not going with all of his little toys that he wanted to put on the American people. And he, at the end, he wasn't able to do it, although he got real creative in his practice about doing it in multiple ways. There are a lot of similarities right now with the Democrat Party. They're trying to reach for a pure power play, just like FDR did back in the 30s. So the question is, what kind of damage are we talking if they succeed in this? Because you got to remember, as you just stated, the House and the Senate are thin razor. And it is very likely those two branches would tip back next time. And the problem with that, and they could very well tip back to the right side of the aisle. And so they may go for all the stakes right now to secure the power, batten down the hatches. But what kind of pain are we talking for America if they pull this off?
We're talking a lot of pain. It's actually interesting because there are differences between what FDR tried and what Biden is trying today. FDR was frustrated because the court kept pointing out that what he was trying to do was unconstitutional. So he bullied the court. He says, if you don't give me what I want, I'm going to pack the court with people that I like, and the court backed down. And we have suffered a lot of pain from that over the decades. What we have here is something a little different. We have orange man bad. Orange man put three people on the court legitimately, absolutely, with advice and consent of the Senate. But again, we're not talking about laws anymore. We're talking about politics. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. In fact, George Washington, in his farewell address, made the point that the alternative domination of one faction over another, sharpened by the spirit of revenge, natural to party dissension, which in different ages and countries has perpetuated the most horrid enormities, is itself a frightful despotism. Mm-hmm. We are living that out today.
Yeah, we are.
This is a political power party play.
Yeah.
This has nothing to do with law. This has nothing to do with the Constitution. This is simply a question of how are we going to exercise our power so we remain in control?
Yeah, you're so
Democrats
right.
Democrats have shown a willingness to do this for years.
Yeah, no, you're so perfectly said, and you're absolutely correct, Paul. Let me remind folks again, 4 p.m., the Constitution Study with Paul Engel. This guy is one of the most knowledgeable. You know, we're so blessed on our platform. We got really two constitutional experts, really Paul Engel now and Tim Alders. Tim has the Disciples of Liberty, which airs at 7 p.m. Eastern time. He's out of Salt Lake City, by the way. He's a fabulous guy, as well as Paul is. Paul's 4 p.m. every day. Check both programs out, of course, but both are constitutional experts. We're going to have some fun, Paul, because I'll be on right after you from 5 to 7 every day. We got a great group of folks coming on with us on the Voice of a Nation. So we're going to have a lot of fun. I look forward to having you visit me here and there throughout the time as we can do that and really make people aware of the Constitution and all the work you're doing. And I wish you so much success here on our network, brother. It's such a pleasure to have you here.
Thank you so much. You know, it's very exciting. I'm learning new things. I'm getting the chance to do things I never thought I'd be able to do. So thank you for the opportunity.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
I'm truly enjoying it.
You're a good guy. And we're blessed to have you, believe me. And Paul's book, by the way, is in the America Out Loud bookstore, The Constitution Study. And we will have a link to that in the post when this goes to a podcast on Sunday afternoon. Let me bring Sergeant Betsy Brentner-Smith back on here. And Sergeant Betsy, I want to ask you this here. Now, you see this other shooting that has happened. This was a horrible, horrible scene. This made me so sick to my stomach, what took place in that FedEx there. I mean, it's disgusting what's going on here. I just want to give you the last word to try to put this in perspective for our listeners and for our country, please. When you look at the rash of shootings we've been dealing with, and I was asking Dinesh up front of the show, is it COVID fever? Are people just gone mental? Are they just off the deep end? What is happening in our country, and how are we reacting to it as a people?
Well, I mean, of course, this shooting in Indianapolis is again, horribly, horribly sad. A 19-year-old young man known to have suicidal ideations, known to be violent. He was known by the police in Indianapolis to be violent. They had already seized a shotgun that he had used previously. It is horrible. It's as we're coming out of this horrible year of COVID, I do think that there's a lot of pent-up emotion. There's so much anger in the media, and there's so much division, and I don't have a clue why this young man did what he did. I understand that a significant number of people of the Sikh community in Indianapolis were victims in this horrible mass shooting. So there may be a racial element, there may be not, but again, this shooting will be used to further A, divide America, and B, try to destroy our Second Amendment rights. And one of the people killed in this shooting in Indianapolis was trying to get to his car in the parking lot to get his legally possessed firearm so that he could stop this shooter. But the shooter got to him first. Perhaps if those employees would have been allowed to carry guns, and they also weren't allowed to carry their cell phones, by the way, maybe we could have had a different outcome. But this is a mental health issue with most of these recent mass shootings that we've seen in the news. Now, Malcolm, we have a lot of other mass shootings in Chicago and Los Angeles that no one ever talks about because those are committed by gang members and all that. So the American media, once again, the legacy media, is only concerned with these mass shootings that further their leftist agenda.
That's exactly it. They're never really reporting what's really happening on these things, and people are so unaware and unconnected. Well, I must say, my heart goes out to all of these families. It is sadder than sad that these things are happening in our country. I have to tell you, it deeply saddens me to see this one with all these people executed, is what they were, totally executed. And I think all the time about our family members, friends, if we're out at, you know, a FedEx store or out at a store of any kind in the public purview or a theater. Think about a theater. We've seen that happen, right? And we're all become this target. Now, we can't live our life under those rocks, but it does leave us with a gulp, you know, to really understand that life, sometimes there's no ration to this stuff. It just goes off the deep end. We have to do a better job, as we were talking up front with Dinesh, about messaging. We've got to get a more positive messaging out there to the American people, which is surely what we're trying to do here on America Out Loud. I want to leave you with a couple of positive thoughts now. First of all, let me thank Sergeant Betsy Bratner-Smith. Always terrific to have her, a national spokesman for the National Police Association. And Paul Engel, again, the Constitution Study. And Dinesh D'Souza, who was at the top of the program with us, and we covered an awful lot with him. My fellow Americans, it's good to be back with you. It's good to be here in the seat. It's almost like riding a bicycle or riding a horse, as you say. You get back on and you feel like you're doing it. You almost have to get the butterflies, you know, when you sit. It's like the car when you turn the key and you get the ignition, and then it gets going and you rev up and you say, "Well, man, I can do this thing," you know? Kind of the same sort of thing here today. It is a pleasure, as always, to be with you. Thank you for being part of the mission here at America Out Loud. It's time, friends, to get involved and get loud.